Less than a week of preseason action to go for the Calgary Flames. They will wrap up their 2018 preseason on Saturday afternoon in Edmonton. Before then and in between that time, we'll see them take on Winnipeg tonight, San Jose tomorrow, in San Jose on Thursday, and then, of course, that game at Rogers Place, on Saturday afternoon against the Edmonton Oilers. Welcome back, Pat Steinberg, Ryan Pinder, and the radio play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, on today's daily Calgary Flames roundtable. But, guys, lots to decide before we get to the end of the preseason, and some battles and some roster spots to be decided on both the back end and up front. I want to start on the back because of all the guys, I know that Austin Zarnik had the hat trick, and we'll talk about him on the roundtable today. But of all the guys that I came away most encouraged with on Saturday, it was Rasmus Anderson on the back end. I thought he was outstanding. He was engaged offensively. He moves the puck well. He skates it well. I thought he looked really good on the power play. So if Rasmus Anderson is in the opening night lineup, not just on the opening night roster, but actually in the lineup in Vancouver October 3rd. Derek, who's he playing with, and whose spot has he taken?
To be honest with you, Pat, unless there is an injury between now and October 3rd, I don't think he's going to be on the opening night roster or in the opening night lineup. Doesn't mean he's not ready to play in the National Hockey League. It's just I think the Flames' top six in defense is set in stone right now. Obviously, you've got Giordano and Brody. You've got Hanifin and Hamonic. And I think you've got Kulak and Stone. And that third pairing right now is what we saw at the end of last season, what we saw for most of last season, and what I believe we'll see at least at the start of this season. But Rasmus Anderson is a guy who's knocking on the door. And at some point in time, he might knock down the door. He's coming off a fantastic season with the Stockton Heat, finished tied for seventh in the AHL in points by defenseman with 39 last season, despite the fact he only played in 56 games. So, you know, this guy's really close. He was an all-star last season at the American Hockey League level. At the National Hockey League level, the one thing that he's going to have to continue to work on is just making quicker decisions. And Bill Peters talked about that a little bit earlier today. And, you know, Anderson's made some progress in that area, but that's the one thing I think he's going to have to continue to work on. And how quickly he's able to get here might depend on how quickly he can start playing a little bit faster.
Might also have to do with how you deal with a situation you might be left with if he outplays Michael Stone. I'm not suggesting he has done that, but I am suggesting that it's going to happen sooner rather than later. His skill set is that of a higher ceiling. He provides the ability to get to the puck to the net, and the ability to move the puck up ice better in terms of how he projects if he reaches the potential that they saw when they drafted him, in the second round a few years ago. He is a guy that does more than what Michael Stone has been able to do over the course of his career, at least at lower levels. So what happens if he's the better of the two and you're sitting October 2nd or whenever last cuts are due in? Are you really sure that the Flames would put Michael Stone in a spot to be a seven and not play? Would you even suggest they'd be willing to put him on waivers? The track record with this organization is that ties go to the veterans, and even if it's not a tie and they've been beaten out a little bit by a rookie, there's still a lot of respect for guys that A, have term on a contract, and B, have been around the league for a while. And I look at it with Brouwer. There's a lot of nights he deserved to be in the press box. Matt Stajan at times last year as well. We didn't see it as much as I thought, you know, the merit would have suggested. And so I don't know that that situation's arrived yet or not. I haven't watched enough of Michael Stone in China or Rasmus Anderson this fall, and clearly there's some runway left to prove who's better. But I'm not convinced that if he is better than Stone, that that means he's going to make this team either.
Don't you think trying to compare Anderson to Stone is like trying to compare apples to oranges? Because
they're different.
They're not the same type of player.
But I don't think that's hard, because I think you ask yourself, like, so if I say, Derek, Michael Stone, tell me what he's great at.
He's a stay-at-home defensive defenseman. He's really good at sealing guys out along the boards and at making sure he's in the right position, a strong position in front of the net. He's a third-pairing guy who has the ability to play up on your second pairing, as he did two seasons ago. Yeah. Because remember, they needed a second-pairing defenseman. They went out and traded to get him from the Coyotes. I don't think they make the playoffs 2 years ago without Michael Stone on their second pairing.
Yeah, and you know what? Guess what? Rasmus Anderson wasn't there 2 years ago. He wasn't ready for the league. That's not the conversation for today. The conversation for today is Anderson right now. Is he ready? I continue to hear that Stone's a good defender and he's good at things, but the data suggests when he steps on the ice, you're more likely to have pucks at your net, especially from dangerous situations, than pucks at the other team's net. So I hear that just like I heard it with, you know, Chris Russell while he was here. And maybe this is a philosophical thing. Maybe some people don't trust the numbers out there, but he's not a shutdown defenseman in the sense that you don't want him out there against other teams' top lines, in my opinion. Pat, like, do you want him out against Kopitar when they're playing LA, the top line of every team? I'd rather be hiding this guy against, you know, a third and fourth line. Like, he's not, like, for, okay, he can defend, but what you're really saying is there's no offense and you really don't want him to be defending the other team's best players, do you?
He's a third pairing defenseman to me. There's no doubt about it. And that is where I think he was best fit when the Flames went out and acquired Travis Hamonic last summer. It allowed them to move Stone to a third pairing role. Now, I know that the Hamonic-Brody pairing and it didn't work out last year, but that was one of the things. That's why they brought him back, because they liked him in a spot that they could put him on. I think he is a passable third pairing defenseman. I do. But here's, Derek, when you said apples and oranges, yes, they are different players, but what it comes down to is they're both the right shot defensemen, and if mm-hmm. they don't want to have two right shot defensemen, which one helps your team win more?
That's
what it comes down to.
We don't know the answer to that question.
And we don't, but I do think there's a potential that in the not so distant future it will be Anderson, which goes back to the point, will they sit Stone in the press box if that is the case? I don't think you're right, it's not clear yet, but say in November it is. Would they put Anderson in over Stone if it was pretty clear he helped them win more?
Here's the thing. How does it become clear?
Because this is what GMs and coaches get paid to do. That's how it becomes clear. In their minds, the player that helps them win more, the pluses netting out the minuses, the better result is the guy that there. Now, obviously,
we don't have enough data on Anderson at the NHL level.
So
they're
going
to have to make an educated guess.
By November, as Patch says, you will have more data on where Michael Stone is at in his career arc. He's probably not getting better year over year. I think absolutely Rasmus Anderson is getting better year over year. One's on the mm-hmm. front nine, one's on the back nine. It is only a matter of when he passes him, not if.
I don't disagree with that. And I think there's a chance it happens this season. And there's going to be a team or teams out there who are looking to add a veteran defenseman like Michael Stone. You might have to eat part of the contract. You might have to make it part of a bigger deal.
You have to.
But I think at some
no
point in time,
well. Yeah.
Rasmus Anderson is probably going to steal a spot in the top six. And maybe it's not Michael Stone's spot. Here's the other option they have. Play one of them on their off wing or offside, mm-hmm. right? You've got Rasmus Anderson and Michael Stone, both right-handed defensemen. If you think that they are clearly in your top six, then maybe it's Brett Kulak
sure.
who's yeah. sitting in the press
and
box.
And who, by the way, they almost were happy to walk away from for nothing.
Well, they put him on waivers, right?
So
that was a savage move by Brad Treliving.
Well, and did it not help his case in arbitration?
Oh, absolutely
sure
it did.
Listen, if you had him locked in at $850 for the next 4 years or something, there's no way you lose that asset for nothing. But it's illustrating a point that this arbitration case was sticky and they didn't want to pay this guy for more than he was. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, we did see Anderson and Stone in very small samples last year, both righties playing together, or am I crazy? I think there was a small number of games at the end. Now, albeit tiny sample size, end of the year, depleted roster, mm-hmm. teams in a death spiral, but I thought I saw that for a game or two. I can't recall off the top of my head.
I feel like that sounds right. I do seem to remember they played Anderson with another right shot defender would likely have been Stone. I feel like that sounds right at some time last year.
Here's another thing I'm going to factor in. When Rasmus Anderson is at his peak as an NHL hockey player, do you see him working on a power play? I do.
Yeah,
I could see it happening absolutely. For sure. He's got a higher ceiling. There's no doubt about it.
So maybe, and look, I know TJ Brody's gotten a lot of power play time. I'm not enamored with him on the power play. Mark Giordano, I think, gets the puck to the net. Dougie Hamilton was their best defender at creating scoring chances on the power play, even though you didn't see him on the first unit until, what, well into the new year, around Christmas, something like that. And I don't know that Noah Hanifin's profile doesn't absolutely scream that. But Anderson's a guy that gives you another option down the road, and maybe Mark Giordano in 2 years isn't a power play guy, but he is. But yeah, I think we're all on the same page. There's no doubt that one player is on the back nine, one's on the front, and there's going to be a crossing. It's just a matter of when, and then when it does, is it awkward or is it pretty obvious that you have to do something? I think it's awkward if it's October 3. I really do, because all of a sudden the deal looks like a bad one for the GM, and the coach is in a spot where here's a guy that probably You know, he went out of his way to talk about when he arrived in Calgary. He didn't mention him in the press conference and then reached out to say, I meant to mention you. Like, this is a guy that's on his radar in terms of veterans and what they provide. Mm-hmm. It would be awkward if it was October 3rd. I'm not here to say that that is the case, but it wouldn't be a comfy spot for the team.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be October 3rd, but I think there is going to be a point in time when they do cross over at the halfway house, to use your golf analogy. And you know what? It could put the Flames in a position where it gives them a bit more flexibility cap-wise. If they feel like they need to add something before the trade deadline and they can move that contract out and you go from spending $3.5 million or a portion of that on your right side third pairing guy to under $1 million, then mm-hmm. it gives you a bit more flexibility. But, you know, the bottom line is you've got Rasmus Anderson pushing on the right side and Yusuf Alimaki, if he's not already pushing, will be pushing on the left side. So you've really got. And if you include Dalton Prout, who I think is going to play some NHL games this season, guys, I think he's going to be the number seven, and they're going to use him in certain situations. You've got nine guys fighting for six spots. Pretty good.
I'm curious on Prout because we heard the same thing when they added him, and then it didn't really happen last year.
Do you think he's the number seven to start the season?
Prout,
is he,
yes.
Do you do?
Yep.
And Anderson starts in the American League is what you're thinking?
You know what? Anderson, he's got a couple of seasons under his belt at the American Hockey League level, but he is still a young player.
Yeah, still needs to play.
And you know what? The Flames are getting close to being at, if they're not already there, at the point the Red Wings were for so many years, where they've got guys who are over-ripening at the AHL level. And we might be saying the same thing about, well, Dylan Dubé has only played a handful of games in the league, but he might have to go down. Andrew Mangiapane, who I think's really flown under the radar so far in the preseason, he might have to go down to start the season.
Spencer Fu might have to go down.
So, know what? If you've got guys spending a bit too much time in the American Hockey League, that's not a bad thing.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a nice situation to be in, and it allows you to manage the cap as well because you can start shedding expensive guys and replacing them with cheaper guys who pass them. That's why it's crucial in today's NHL to have guys contributing on entry levels because you can move off a $3-4 million player and get the same production.
We do know that Rasmus Anderson, Yusuf Alimaki going to play as a pairing in this game against the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Pat Steinberg, Ryan Pinder, Derek Wills, Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. Only time for two topics today. That's okay because that was a really good first one. Austin Zarnik is the second one. Introduced himself to fans in a very impressive way on Saturday night. 3 goals and very cool to see. That was our first eyes-on look at him in a Flames uniform. We still don't know a ton about Zarnik. That was a great start playing with Backlund and Tkachuk. But could we, Derek, be talking about a potential long-term fit with those two players for Zarnik?
Maybe, but now where do you play Elias Lindholm? Because I believe James Neal's going to start the season on the right side of a line with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, and we'll see where it goes from there. And I know that the plan written in pencil was to have Elias Lindholm on the right side of a line with Michael Backlund and Matthew Tkachuk. So if you put Austin Zarnik in that spot, and I think it's something they should consider based on what we saw a couple of nights ago, where does Elias Lindholm play? What position does he play? Does he play center or right wing?
Today at practice when they had all the NHLers together, Zarnik was still with Backlund and Tkachuk. They had Lindholm on the right side with Derek Ryan and Michael Frolik.
That'd be a great checking line.
So that's what they had.
So that's an option, and I mean, the word of the season, and you and I talked about it during the summer, Ryan, and Pat, you and I have talked about it since early September, options. They have so many different options, which is a good thing, because you don't have to have your lines written in stone or even in pen. You can write them in pencil, and if a game's not going your way, you can move a few guys around and try to change things up. If, you know, guys don't have chemistry together, you can, you know, try to make some new combinations. It's a really good question. I mean, Austin Zarnik still has a long way to go, in my opinion. The fact that he scored a hat trick in that game on Saturday night's great, fantastic way to introduce himself to the fans here in Calgary. But, you know, he's a guy who, to this point in his career, hasn't proven to be a legitimate NHL player. Now, if he had been with an organization other than the Bruins, he probably would have been given more of an opportunity to prove that he was that guy. But, you know, the Flames are going to give him a chance. There's no doubt about it. I don't care if he's playing in their top six or their bottom six. He's going to get some power play time. So he's going to have an opportunity here that, quite frankly, he didn't have in Boston. But for me to pencil him in or pen him in to the right side of the second line with Backlund and Tkachuk. I'm not ready to do it yet. I still think that Elias Lindholm's the best guy to go on that spot, but hey, they've got four preseason games left, so that could change between now and the end of the preseason and the start of the regular season, but he's certainly an option in that spot, even if it's not as a regular, even if it's only in situations where maybe you're down a goal in the third period and you need to put a more offensive line out there. Sure. Maybe he's a fit in that spot.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. He's not the probable guy, but I'd have no problem with it. And, like, let's be honest, like, Elias Lindholm's never cracked 20 goals. There is a lot of people banking on him getting a lot further along offensively. There's no guarantee that happens. 5 years in the league's a while, and it's not like, well, it's a new coach, new system. I mean, it's the same coach he's had all but 1 year.
Better players around him,
though. Sure. Absolutely. But the counterpoint would be, Austin Zarnik never got to play with the second-best center and, you know, arguably second or third-best winger of the Bruins. So I wouldn't stunned if that happened either. And I'll tell you what, if you have, as you noted, Frolik, Ryan, and Lindholm, that's a line that I think would create nightmares. And also, maybe you can get a little more offense with a third-year Matthew Tkachuk, Austin Zarnik, Michael Backlund, and it's not the one line that has to go out immediately when someone else's top line comes on.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I'm intrigued at. You know, we've talked about options so often, and just the way all of a sudden a guy like Zarnik, if he's on that line, the way it trickles down, now you've got Lindholm as a third-line right winger, you've got Bennett as a potential fourth-line left winger, and not to say that, you know, their fourth liner, it gives you depth up and down the lineup, and that's what I believe this team is trying to cultivate.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got Michael Backlund, who's one of the best two-way forwards in the National Hockey League, in my opinion, and you've got Matthew Tkachuk, who I think might score 30 goals this season.
Because, not crazy.
Yeah, it's not crazy. Well, he scored 24 last year.
And he missed 14 games?
Yeah, missed the final 7 games of last season. And he's a guy who just keeps getting better and better and better. Didn't start last season on the first unit power play. I expect him to start and finish the season on the first unit power play in his third NHL campaign. And what people might forget about Matthew Tkachuk, because he is such a good goal scorer early in his career, is that he's got more assists than anybody from that fantastic draft class of 2016, more than Austin Matthews, more than Patrick Laine. So Matthew Tkachuk is a really good playmaker, as is Michael Backlund. And Austin Zarnik, the most surprising thing about him for me, guys, is his shot. He's 5'9 and 160 pounds. He's not a big guy, but he fires the puck. It explodes off his stick, as we saw in that second goal that he scored last Saturday night. So, yeah, it's a really interesting conversation. I know we got to wrap up, but just two guys I'm watching tonight, Garnet Hathaway and Dylan Dubé. Because when the preseason started, I didn't have Hathaway in my top 12, but I thought he had two really, really strong games over in China, and now it's hard not to have him in the top 12. But Dubé is trying to steal a spot from someone, and Hathaway might have to be the guy that he steals it from.
Yeah, I don't know that both make the team. That's interesting.
That'll do it. Derek Wills, the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames. He's Pinder. I'm Steinberg. That is the daily Calgary Flames Roundtable.